You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The upside of failure.
The upside of failure. Ntate Don, Bra Don, my father in music. I don't know how else to hype you up except to say the Grammy nominated and just so accomplished maestro. Such an honor to be able to chat to you on my show. Welcome and thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I am so excited. So let me just calm myself down. When you were younger, what was the first thing you understood failure to mean as a small child? What was the first time you understood the concept of, oh, this is what failing is?
Not achieving what you set out to do.
Oh.
And I'm very fortunate and very lucky to have one goal, to have had one goal.
Mm.
And so, you know, I think that tells you why I've lasted this 50 years, because I didn't have any other thing except one. I just wanted to be a musician, and that was it.
When did that clarity come? Because we know, you know, just the guest I was speaking to earlier, Kaylee, who's a baker, who has known her whole life she could bake, but she never knew it was possible for that to be her living. So when was it the clarity that this is all I'm going to do?
Well, my story has always been that when I was a kid, I only wanted to be a musician and nothing else.
Yes.
You know, parents will always say, no, I have a doctor.
Yes.
So, but I knew from probably the age 7, 8 that, you know, music is the only thing that I wanted to, because I had uncles who played music.
Yes.
And I would just sit and listen to them every day when they practice and stuff. And by 8, 9, I was actually playing a self-made guitar, you know, well, can, you know, with strings and stuff, and, you know, thumping on it. And by the age of 10, actually, I had a guitar, and that, not my personal one, but the friends, cousins who would borrow me.
Yes.
And then I learned, you know, to play that very well at the age of 10. And probably at 11, I was starting to compose. At 12, at 14, and I made a trip to come to Joburg to make my first recording in 1972.
So having that clarity, as much as it is a blessing, what are the downsides that maybe people aren't aware of knowing early on what your gift, what your purpose, what your thing is you're supposed to be doing with your life? Are there any sides to it that aren't so positive? For example, if there's a naysayer who says, ah, brah, you are wasting your time, but let's literally all you set your mind to, that could be quite discouraging to somebody who hasn't got these three backup plans.
Yeah, you grow up with people like that. I grew up in that type of environment where they thought, you know, it's just time wasting playing guitar. You're not going to get anywhere. And, you know, you just block that off if you have a goal. So I had a goal. So I was not going to be deterred by talks.
Yes.
Because talks are just talks. You know, I was doing the do. You know, it was the deed that I was doing.
Yes.
So, and I knew that from there, there should be results. But the main focus for me was to get into the recording studio and make a record, you know, and it started like that. And, you know, and I knew that I was on the path to achieving greats in my career. So I've never had anything that was destructive or sport or anything. No, even though I loved sport and I did, you know, all sorts of things, but they were not going to be, my line of career. I had one line of career, to be a composer, an arranger, and a producer. And by the way, when I started making a demo record, I was 13 years old. It was an unheard of, actually, in this country, where, you know, I had two tapes and recorded from one tape to the other and just bouncing off tracks.
Yes.
And, you know, I remember when I met... when I went go to Johannesburg at the Gallo Records, Mavutela label back then, it was the black label side. So I met guys like Ray Peary and them for the first time, you know, in 1972. And when I played their recordings, and then none of them could believe that it was made at home. And they asked me to play, if I could play the stuff that was on record. And they gave me a guitar and I played. and say.
I'm so curious about this homemade instrument that you did, and yes. And that's what I love about children, and what I miss about childhood is our imagination was not restricted. Like, if you wanted to make a sound, you didn't wait for an instrument to be given to you. Indeed. Use what you have.
Yes.
How did you tune those strings? Did you just put strings and whatever sound it made, that was the note, or did you actually try and tune it?
You know, you try to tune it and to a record that's playing at that time. And you listen to a record and then you tune it to, you know, according to that.
Yes.
And that's how I learned to tune. It has three strings, by the way.
Yes.
You know, that's where I learned to play. You know, and when I got the real thing, obviously it was a shift from there to, you know, the real thing, which is had six strings, you know.
Because your homemade guitar didn't have frets
no
frets at all. You just had to memorize
the positions. It's like playing a violin. You know, you just have to memorize where, you know, I put my foot, my finger there, and then move to that section. I should produce that.
So knowing what we know now about your life, which is that for you, you had one goal, which you are continuing to achieve. It continues to grow and evolve. You've never really experienced failure in the traditional sense of what we understand failure to be.
Yes.
What was school like for you? Because school back in the day, particularly for the young black child, there were no extracurricular activities. No one was saying, oh, you've got talent, let's send you to the music center. You know, it was primarily all about academics. Did it feel like a little bit of a waste of time? Like, I could be using this time to be working on my music.
You know, we were lucky and unlucky. In 1964, when I started schooling, we had a music taught at school.
Mm.
65 and 67, it was cancelled that no black child should learn music again.
What?
So yes, we learned with a pathway to music, which I still have them actually, and they cancelled music at school. So 64, 65, I learned music at school.
And was it
theory,
music?
Actually, it was theory, yes,
theory. So you actually were, because I was wondering if it was the basics.
It was the basics
of like rhythm and you know the stems and.
That's it, and I think it was a good base, you know, that one had, and I'll take it over later on, you know, when I started really playing, and then I'll apply that knowledge, and that's why I was curious to actually later on to. Write music exams, and you know, I got my grade 8 and went up, you know,
to your licentiate and all of those things.
Yeah.
I think people who haven't gone through the classical side, even if you were being examined in a genre like jazz, it actually is very technical.
It's very technical.
It's not just as simple as Omar Braton can play. You know, you actually, there are certain things that you need to do to pass those exams.
Yes.
Looking at your schooling career, because you're telling us at 14, there you were impressing music executives with your demo recording. What happened to your schooling journey then?
It went on. I think I was just an average student, you know. because music, you know, I've never been, I've regarded myself as that type of student who was, you know, I was just an average between 10 and 20 position in class.
Ooh, and that was, the days of positions. I'm so glad I didn't grow up in the era when they're like, oh, number last.
Yeah. So I was never been, you know, but I loved, because I used to think they're not teaching me what I want to learn. Because I used to frequent the library, and you know, I discovered science and I discovered mathematics. And by the way, when we were schooling, there was no mathematics. Mathematics was introduced when we did Form 1, I think. Form 1.
And by then, you've passed foundation stage.
Yes, and we were introduced. We're doing only arithmetic, and at that time, you know, I have discovered you know, algebra and all sorts of things. At the, you know, and I love mathematics, and you know. Probably if I had a base or where I really had learned mathematics properly, I could have been, you know, mathematicians like my brothers who are, you know. But I still love mathematics, and you know, I love science, I love cosmology. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are the things that you know, like I read more in plus history, by the way, and so I've been shaped properly from outside school rather than in class.
And I think the beauty is that education does not just live in the school grounds.
Absolutely. And I was very fortunate to have been mentored by great people that I always mention in my recordings that I lived with, you know, at 14, 16, you know, I was going out, with people who spending time, who are in their 30s at that time, you know, and their 40s, who, you know, I was introduced to black consciousness in the early 74, 5. And, I really was grounded properly, you know, in terms of finding people who would spend their time in really shaping most of the guys that I was with, you know, at that time.
So when did that time come for the decision to actually leave the formal schooling system?
Well, it came after 76, after the riots, and yes. I was kicked out of school and with friends.
No, let's told you.
You know, for being involved in the 76, right? Mm-hmm. You know, almost every student was part of that. And so that was the period when, I was not allowed to be back in class.
Mm.
And I went and wrote my matric in self-taught, and we grouped ourselves, you know, as young people who were all kicked out from school. And, that's how, you know, we survived. You know, we spent time and teaching ourselves in the library at that time, yeah.
And do you feel that that may have been a blessing in disguise for you, that particular trajectory in your education?
Indeed it was, because, I've learned so much. Besides the curriculum that was set up, we could dabble into many things, as I say, you know, and I really worked hard on my mathematics and science, and even though there were not the subjects that I wrote, but in history. So I neglected my Africans. I failed.
I mean, I can understand why you might not have been that interested in considering 76.
I never even touched the book on that. You know? So, yeah, that was that. So my matric was that, you know, was that, you know, you get the A, the B's and the C's, and then and failure on Africans. So, yeah, that was that. But, I went out and got myself continuing teaching myself, and I got a few diplomas out there, you know,
yes,
in the US, locally in the UK. So I received a few diplomas mainly in music, you know.
So what are you a student of right now in your life?
Well, I just registered last year for my honors degree in musicology.
Yes.
Which was accepted by UNISA. So I'm a student of UNISA, the honors degree in musicology now.
Why is it still so important for you? Because some people might feel like, yo, people that love studying, you never finish, then another degree, then a master's, then a this. Why was it important for you to register and do that, where you literally could just watch the YouTube videos and then have the knowledge without somebody noting? Because to the public, and yes, this is a very personal thing, but to everyone outside, it's like, how? But why?
I don't know. I think curiosity also. And I just loved reading, you know. I thought maybe if I get into the formal education again, it will force me to concentrate on one or two, three things and that I'm doing. I think it's just about that. It's about curiosity. Doing the honors degree and given the subjects that I've already covered in life already, you know, so I don't find it really that hard, you know. It's just that, just to formalize and formalize my train of thoughts and going forward. Yes.
So if you write your exam end of this year and then they say, unfortunately, Mr. Bra Don Laga, you failed, what will that so-called failure feel like for you?
No,
or what will it represent for you?
You know, as long as they say I failed, I'll continue to do it again until I pass. So failure for me is a lesson. And life is about lessons. You don't start by doing things and getting them right on the onset, because you don't learn much from that.
Mm.
So I will never regard that failure as failure, because I'll continue doing it again.
Yes.
And until I reach my goal.
011-883-0702. You can give us a call. Ntate Don Laga is in studio for your questions, particularly around the subject of failure. He is celebrating 50 years in the business this year. You can also use the WhatsApp line 072-702-1702.
702.
The upside of failure.
Let's go to the lines. We have Teboho in Baklu. Teboho, how are you doing?
I am blessed. I'm blessed. Hi. Come with it.
Teva.
It puzzles me why President Ramaphosa has it on as our Minister of Arts and Culture. We have a minister right there.
No, but Teboho, if he becomes the minister, we are going to lose out on the music.
No, we won't. He must continue to do the work. Once an artist, always an artist. You know that.
This is true.
Yes.
Would you take on the role, Ntate?
I think if I'm asked to do that, I would definitely do it.
Oh, Teboho, hi man, you've brought an agenda. We need to take it up.
I know it's that. Teboho is always doing this. I know.
No fake court order, nothing.
Okay. So Teboho, what else would you like to share with Ntate Don today?
I want to say congratulations, Kom, for, actually, you're celebrating 50 years in music. You being in music is as old as I am. It's unbelievable. I mean, it's amazing. It's quite a feat. It deserves celebration, and I think you deserve all the support in the world. Go out and break a leg, because of you are still fresh.
Thanks a lot, Kom.
Thank you so much, Teboho, for that call. Music has played a major role in politics over, the many decades.
Yeah.
What do you think the role of music is in politics today, considering it's a different struggle?
Well, my worry is that, I'm not hearing a lot of musicians addressing the situation today, like when we're growing up, We are supposed to be the people that document the life or the history that we live in today. And it's missing. I find it missing, and it's a bit worrying, But obviously, no one knows where this is leading towards. But, I think they should rise up, those conscious musicians out there who address the situation that life is about today.
We've got a special voice note that's come to an 072-702-1702, but very quickly, William in Mamelodi, how are you doing?
I'm well, and you,
yes, go ahead.
You've got a maestro there. Don.
Yes.
Yeah, just keep it up, bro.
Thanks a lot.
I love it. Hey, I'm so glad. Yeah.
Thank
keep
you.
It up, my man.
Thank you so much, William from Mamelodi. And then we've got a special guest. There's a special voice note, but there's a special guest. Anonymous, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
I am so good. Ntate Don is listening.
How are you, Praton?
I'm good, and you?
Are you good, Praton?
I'm good, Anonymous.
Can you tell who it is? He doesn't know who it is. You have to give him a clue.
Let me start with my story. A few years back, I get you in a lift in a place called High Point in
Hell. Yeah, well, no.
And I'm carrying my
shut up.
This man looks at me and says, hey, how are you? And he's carrying a keyboard. Here, I'm fine. Are you Oscar the Big O from Club Raspberry? I say, yes. Are you? Your cassettes are causing chaos, in the music industry.
Yes.
And that time I was doing compilations for this record label.
And selling Buddha Rolls, by the way.
Yes. And then from there, Praton says, hey, this cassette of yours, they're called Mix Masters. Then he says, how much are they paying you? I say, 20 cents. He says, no, they are ripping off. Because me, I was just supplying them with records. He says, come up, let's go up. I was staying on the 10th floor. And then he takes me up to his built room where he was staying on the 29th floor at High Point in Hillbrow.
Yeah.
Oh.
When I got there, I found a mini studio. This is the first time I saw this, my studio.
That's where Kalawa was born.
Oh, Skido.
Wow. And Praton says, you know what? We can do this. You know, you can bring these records and then reprogram it. And then that time, about 2-3 weeks, he was actually moving out to go and stay in Yeovil. Then I told him that, okay, it's fine. But I got a friend of mine who I buy records from. His name is DJ Christos. Then he said, so bring him. And from there, this is when we met the three of us, Praton Laka and Christos. And this is when we started Kalawa. K-A coming from Christos' surname, L-A, my surname, Laka. And then W-A. My surname Longwa. That's how everything was started.
I mean, Oskido, you yourself are an icon in a very different way. And for many people that don't know how this journey began and they look at your careers today, they think, what a weird combo of three guys that came together to start a record label.
It is unbelievable. Let me tell you, I can write a book about Oskar.
I think you should.
He's just an unbelievable person. And when I met him, I mean, he was young.
Let me talk about you. From there, Praton, what happened is that, remember, he was one of the old musicians who were understanding. It was the birth of Kwaito.
Mm.
And when we met that time, this is when our first record was POP. You know, it was an instrumental project.
Mm.
And then after that, because I was staying at High Point, and then I used to run a club called Razzmatazz with the late Ian Sikola. So I used to have all these dancers, Volevu, coming in and dance. And Praton says, no, but we need to start doing a project with voices because we've just done an instrumental project. We need vocalists. Then Ragamuffin was big. Then I got in touch with Junior. He says, no, those girls who always move around with Oskido, because Volevu and them, they used to go with me at the club as my dancers. He says, they can sing. I say, serious? Boom! That's when we brought them
Boom
together,
Shaka.
And this is how Boom Shaka was born.
Yes.
Yo.
And the first song we did was called Makwere Kwere, and Praton was on the vocals doing a first Kwaito track, Makwere.
Shut
up, Oscar.
Oskido, I'm holding you now to account. Jorge, I also want you. We also need your story, ne? But thank you so much just for sharing, you know, on the bits of the story with Ntate Don. Unfortunately, we do have to go to the news shortly, but the good news is Ntate Don Laka is still with us. He's still going to play, and I will get his final thoughts after the news on what is the message for all of you as the listeners. On failure, what is the lesson we should be learning in this lifetime? It's 2:30.
The upside of failure.
Sometimes failure is the foundation of greatest success stories.
As we wrap up the upside of failure with Ntate Don Laka, we heard from Oskido there just sharing such an interesting journey about your life. You have always had an eye for talent. What are your views on the talent that we have at the moment in terms of how they are using their talent musically?
I think this is a different period. I'd hate to be the judge.
Because we're not over by the piano, but mamela ama piano.
I like all genres of music, and more especially, it has to mean something to me. You know? But I cannot judge what is happening today. It's different from what I used to do and what I'm doing. So, yeah, I think that there's great genres, and as long as it's pushing South African boundaries, I really appreciate that.
Who is your all-time favorite pianist?
Abdullah Ibrahim.
All-time favorite vocalist?
Yeah, that's a difficult one.
It's a difficult one.
It is many, many of them. And, I would put out there Mam Dorothy Masuka.
Mm.
And I would have people like Salif Keita.
Mm.
You can see the genres that I'm choosing. You know, that so yeah, it's a difficult one. And Miriam Makeba, the youth Miriam Makeba, is just unbelievable.
Definitely is. I did say we have a special voice note before I get your final thoughts on failure.
Wow, Bradon Laga, I can't believe you are celebrating 50 years in the music business. That's incredible. That's an incredible feat. I remember when I first met Bradon Laga, I was at university. I was maybe 19 years old. And one of my friends kind of forced me to go to an audition for a show that used to be called The Shell Road to Fame. And Bradon Laga was one of the judges at The Shell Road to Fame. And I remember that day like it happened yesterday. I walked onto that stage completely unprepared. I had never been to a talent contest before. And I got there and I sang a song from a play that I had never seen, that was singing about things that I didn't understand, and I just completely bombed. The song I remember was a song from a play called Porgy and Bess, which is an African-American play, which to this day I haven't seen. But yeah, the song was also sung by Nina Simone.
Yes.
And the reason that I knew the song was because Whitney Houston had performed the song.
Oh.
Anyway, I walked up onto that stage and I sang three lines. I said, I love you, Porgy.
And you blew me away.
Don't let them take me. Don't let them handle me and drive me mad. And my knees were knocking and the crowd started booing. Because obviously everybody was singing The Children Are Our Future, Greatest Love of All.
Yeah.
Or they were singing some Mariah Carey song. Needless to say that after that huge L that I took at the Shell Road to Fame, Bradon Laga called me, because obviously they had the numbers of all the contestants. And he said, hey, I saw something in you. And invited me to come to a session. That's how I met Bongo Muffin. And as they say, the rest is history. So I'm heavily indebted to Bradon Laga for my entire music career. And I want to say congratulations on 50 years, and we wish you 50 more.
Thank you. You are such a great person, by the way. I'll never forget that day because...
And that's Tandi Somaswai, by the way, for those that don't know, that are listening.
She blew me away as I was almost in tears that day.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, her song choice is not a typical song choice.
Yes.
Because I know that song, and it's got interesting things you need to be able to do as a vocalist.
And, you know, what got me interested was she was the only person doing a solo with no instruments and nothing.
Acapella.
Everyone came with a cappella. Everyone came on stage with band or been begged. And I realized that here lies the greatest young singer in the country.
Final thoughts on failure to all of the listeners.
Well, I think, you know, if you regard failure as the ultimate, it means that you haven't set your goals right. Or when you do something, as I've mentioned, that you go towards it, you fail, and you don't repeat it, this means you are a failure yourself. But you can get rid of that by continuing and honing your skill towards it. This means failure is a lesson, by the way.
Failure is a lesson. Bradon Laga on the upside of failure.